Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN. Well, we're going to see if Anita's internet works well enough.
So far, it's been touch and go, but we have an exciting new guest that Mel just gave the best nickname to, and we don't know if she likes it yet or not, but we're going to trial it and see what happens. How does that sound?
So I have named her Grandmaster Reb, but that's not her name. Her name is Rebecca. Is that correct?
am happy to go by either of them. Usually it's Rebecca, but I'm open to it
It'd be GMR. Right? That'd be your
for
monogram towels.
Yeah, it works.
What is your name, your full name? Tell us. And where are you today? Where do you live?
My name is Rebecca Dettori. I live in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. So I moved to Collegeville very recently from the Happer-Horsham area, and like outside Philadelphia, sort of out of necessity when I was taking care of my husband. And then recently moved out of that home.
Rebecca,
Yes.
do you have any rapping capabilities to go with your moniker?
Okay. I can't like freestyle right now. So this is funny. So every Valentine's Day, I would write my husband, my late husband, a rap, like about our
What?
previous year. About our previous year. So like I can't like it took a little bit of thinking. I wasn't just like busting out like, but I had to be like, so on Valentine's Day, I'd be like, give me a beat. And then like I'd rap it to the Valentine's Day card.
Mel, you're a soothsayer. You unlocked us. Like, we were never going to get this out of her without that. Like, that would never have come up. So, this is very exciting.
That was super random. Yeah. Who knew? Who would have known that you actually have written your own raps and now you are Grandmaster Reb, dubbed by me, who had no idea. Hopefully somebody haunted us and that's why we're talking about it. Well, guess what? I can make beats. So if you need a beat, I'll give you one. You can make a rap.
I'll think about it.
Okay.
I'll see where the
Okay, Rebecca, why don't you back up a little bit and tell us about your
conversation
person? Who is it?
goes. Okay. Yes. So I met my husband Mike in 8th grade. Like we've been dating since 8th grade. We broke up once and we went to college. We went to different colleges and broke up for like a month. And it was like traumatic. We didn't last very long. We got back together and then had been together since. So we got married in September of 2016, had two kids. When our kids were 2 years old and about 5 months old, my husband started having these like weird symptoms. He started out having weakness in his left hand, and he was this like super dedicated to like fitness and working out. He was in our garage every morning at like 4:30 a.m. working out before the kids get up. Crazy. And he started noticing that he was having like trouble gripping his dumbbells. Thought he probably just got injured working out or had carpal tunnel. So that was like our original thought. And as the weeks went on, he got tested, like carpal tunnel was ruled out. There was really no, things just progressed, and he started having like overall weakness and coordination issues. He started dropping things. He started tripping, and we were like, something more is going on here. And then he started getting something that he would call brain fog, which is like difficulty thinking, or like he would say fuzziness in his brain. And he would like disengage from our routine, like bathing the kids, putting them to bed. And so we obviously knew something was wrong, right? So we went to get an MRI after, you know, other testing and things. We were like nervous he had ALS, and then the testing ruled it out. And so eventually, with a little bit of fighting, we got an MRI finally. And found out that he had two lesions and a whole ton of swelling in his brain. The person reading his MRI was someone I knew, because we were like, it was going to take like weeks to get an MRI. And we were calling around to see if we had any connections who could get him in for an MRI sooner. So we knew the person. We drove to New Jersey, like an hour away, to get this MRI done. And so the friend read the results right away. And we were in the waiting room, and he was like, so like, this is not normal. You have a dot of swelling. There's two lesions. They thought at first it was some like rare manifestation of MS. And he was like, go down like a couple miles down the road to our hospital. I'm going to tell them you're coming, going in the ER. And then that's where we went through so much testing, spent a lot of time there until we were transferred to Jefferson in Philadelphia. For a consultation with a neurosurgeon there, because we at this point weren't sure if they were tumors or like they thought it was maybe like MS or maybe something called ADEM, which is like a could be a very rare reaction to a vaccination. And so we had a biopsy two days later. This was May 21st. He had a biopsy, and the doctor called me and confirmed that they were brain tumors.
I think it's interesting that you said that you had to fight for the MRI, because I think a lot of people have that same experience. It's like, I know my body, I know something's wrong, help me figure out what's wrong. And it sometimes takes so long to go from symptoms to figuring out what it is. And I don't know if you feel this way, but you just think, like, what if we would have been able to access that care sooner? Like, there's all those feelings of what if, even though you don't have any indication that that would change things. I don't know if you experienced that whole like, oh, come on. Like, if we just could have gotten there sooner, maybe the outcome would be different.
I think about that all the time. But so we went to, first of all, it's like in general to get an appointment with a neurologist, they're like, it's like months. Mm-hmm.
It's like 2029. You can get an appointment.
Yeah. Right. Like, and we were like, we don't have months. Like if we had waited months, he wouldn't have lived even the 16 months that he lived. So we got in one place, and it kind of made sense why they were like the only practice with availability, because we went and she was like, sort of brushed it off. Like he had anxiety, and we knew it was more. And I was like, if this was me, like maybe I could understand someone telling me like, this is, you're probably just anxious. Like what, like that would have made sense for me. But he was like the calmest person, like never acted like this. And so we knew it was something more. So we were like, we need an MRI. We need to like, we can't just, she was like, I think the doctor was like, we'll see you in a month to like check in. And we're like, this is crazy. Every single day he's worse. So that's why we had to like ask them for the script and then find someone who could get us in for an MRI. So yeah, it was not an easy process, and it's frustrating because, like, again, every day mattered. It really.
So what kind of brain cancer did the biopsy come back
So
as?
he was diagnosed with two anaplastic astrocytomas. So they're grade three gliomas.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was brain. So it was, we like, the surgeon called me when he was in, and again, I have like a baby at home. So I'm like back and forth, like nursing my baby at home, back to the hospital. And he called me as Mike was recovering and was like, everything went well. But these are gliomas. But at this point, we were like, maybe it's still not cancer. We didn't know. He was like going to do the analysis over the next couple of days. And then a couple of days later, I remember we were sitting on our couch and he did call and he's like, these are looking like grade three. And we're like, well, it's not grade four, so that's good. But it's brain cancer. So, like, and then he's like, I remember the surgeon saying, people can live years with these. And we're like, I don't know if that was supposed to be like comforting, but it more felt like people also don't live years with these. And we're like, it was like shocking, obviously, in the
And
home.
years is not the goal. Like, your
Right.
life is the goal, you know?
Right. Like,
Like,
years isn't.
thanks.
Yeah.
How old was Mike at this time, and how old were you?
We were 29.
Okay. Perfect. You'd lived a good life. He'd had a long 29 years. So just 3 or 4 years should be good enough, right?
Should be fine. Yeah.
What year was this?
This was 2021.
Okay.
Oh, so cool. So, like, kind of pandemic-y too. That probably made things easier as well.
Yeah, we had just like went through the whole like having a baby during the pandemic, and then it was like right into this.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Good
So
time.
you find out he's got astrocytoma, which are gliomas, that he might have years to live. So, like, what do you do? And how do you even wrap your brain around that? Your brain. Ha
Right.
Nice, Anita.
ha.
It was, I like very quickly like shifted into this, like, I'm gonna save his life. I shifted into caregiver mode and I was like all over the internet. I was in these groups, I was in brain cancer groups, I was talking to like doctors all over. We were talking to a lab in Germany, we were consulting with all these different doctors. And so I think like my coping mechanism was to like convince myself that I was gonna find the treatment that didn't exist to save his life. And taking care of him was like a coping mechanism, like that helped me so much, having something to do for him. So for several months, that's what we would do. We would just consult with different doctors, and eventually, so he started radiation treatment. That was 6 weeks, every day for 6 weeks. He'd drive into the city. We drive. He couldn't drive. Me or his dad would drive him. And then you get so many different recommendations from doctors. And this was like so overwhelming, but also it's like a good thing because you want so many brilliant minds involved. But it was frustrating because everyone has a different opinion. And so it was like he should do standard of care and take chemo while he's going through radiation. Or then other people were like, I don't think you really think chemo is going to do anything for him, maybe just radiation or radiation and then start chemo. And so we were like, well, what the heck? But no one really believed any of those things was going to be like a game changer for him. So we decided to forego standard of care. And our doctor at Jefferson found us a trial through Michigan. And he started on this experimental treatment, which actually was amazing. Like, he started on this treatment after radiation and he was doing really, really well for a couple months. Like we'd go in the hospital because we had several hospital visits like throughout for other things, side effects, other issues that would come up. And doctors would comment that like it looked like he had his tumors completely removed when they were inoperable. So like this treatment was amazing. And we were like, and I remember the doctor saying like it had he they feel like it has the potential to be a home run. And we were like, this is great. We were like on top of the world. And it was great for a couple months. And then all these other symptoms started occurring. So this experimental treatment was wonderful. We had like we took a trip to Disney with the kids.
You like have to. That's like required, isn't it? Yeah, I
Right.
think so.
I'm going next week. My kids don't know. And
Oh.
I'm kissing them, and I've never done that before. I'm just gonna like wake them up and be like, where do you guys want to go today? And
okay. How old is your youngest now?
Three, and my kids are 3 and 5.
Are you going alone?
I was going to, but then my dad and his partner are going to come too.
Okay. So. I was going to say, you need a leash.
For real. And if I was I
not even joking.
And don't listen to anybody that's going to judge you.
No.
Okay. I'm so
excited.
I understand
why people have them. But yes, okay. I'm like, it's literally like the parenting moment I've been waiting for. It's just like surprising them that morning. So, this was early 2022. So we went to Disney. We had some really good times during those months. So then Mike started experiencing something called nystagmus, which like when he would turn, his eye would wiggle.
They'd go. Super familiar with nystagmus. Cause you know why?
Why?
Jason had congenital nystagmus. So his eyes mm-hmm. did that all the time. And people thought he was drunk all the time. Cause it happens when you get super drunk or when something's wrong with your brain. It's not usually a good sign. Anyway.
Wait, could he do it on command?
No. So when he looked at you, his eyes just went diddle, yeah. all the time. It was weird.
It is. So we had that for a while and we were like, well, he just had an MRI. Like it's probably a side effect of something. But we were hoping that was the case. And then one day we were at my son's soccer practice and I was on the field and Mike was in the bleachers. And in the middle of that practice, like something changed and it turned to complete double vision. So like by the time that practice was over, he was like falling, like I was like holding on to him, walking out to the car because he couldn't see, like he was seeing double of everything and it just switched.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we went home, we called the doctor again, we got back into the hospital. The hospital visits get like mixed up in my head because we were there so many
sure.
times. They're 911 trips. And but after he started having the double vision, we went to the hospital. They were like, the MRI still looks okay. Go to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And he got prism glasses for the double vision. But because the double vision was constantly getting worse, they were only helpful for like 2 days. So then we went. You know, it just kept getting worse and worse. And then we would like cover his eye, give him like an eye patch, and he'd walk around with an eye patch.
Like a pirate.
Yes. And normal. He was always like cracking jokes and he'd walk around the house singing Hurt by Johnny Cash. He'd be like, what have I become? So he would always like make light of it. But this is like, it was really, really getting worse. So,
that would have to be so hard. Like your vision, you take that for granted. And I sometimes think that even being, this is, I shouldn't say this or I should knock on wood, like being not able to see might be better than that like double vision that makes you, did it make him feel sick? Like, was it really messing with him? I would think that would be awful.
Yes. He was just always this like calm, cool, collected person. Like the calm to my storm. Like, so even in this situation, like he just like was taking what rolled with it, like took what was happening and just like dealt with it, tried to do his best with what was happening. But yeah, I mean, it makes you nauseous. Like double vision is horrible.
Ugh.
So back to the hospital again, eventually after a couple hospital visits, they did another MRI and they have noticed some growth in his brain stem. And that's when everything just progressed so fast. So like went from like getting the best news possible to this growth that started quickly affecting. Actually, it was around Easter. Like every time something happened, it was right around this time of year. So over Easter and the following like several weeks, he was started to lose his ability to hear.
Oh my gosh.
Eat, like swallow, walk, it, like everything that like makes you every function was just started to just he struggled with over the next couple weeks. And then that's when like our caregiver mode, like really, we really had to really like be really hands on. And we moved right around the corner from my in-laws. So they were over every day, but we were, yeah, like that spring and the summer we're really just caring for him. He was put on, we decided to put him on hospice in like probably June and he died, in September.
At home.
At home.
Oh, how old was he when he died? Not old.
30. I mean, he lived for about 16 months with once his death.
So those people were liars too, who said that he could live for years with that.
Yeah.
How old were your two kids when he died?
1 and 3.
So they don't even understand like anything at that point in time.
No, I mean, they were affected like in the moment, like they kind of just knew something was weird at home. Something was sad. Something was like, I mean, I talked to like child life specialists. I talked to everyone I could to figure out how I talked to them appropriately. And so we did, like, I would just be open with them. Well, what was happening? Like, daddy's sleeping because he doesn't feel good. His cancer medicine's making him not feel well. Or I have to take daddy to his cancer treatment or things like that. So we would just talk about it openly so that they would ask questions. Well, my 3-year-old really would ask questions, openly back. But they didn't obviously understand what was going on. And even today, like my older son knows, but he can't comprehend exactly what happened.
Yeah. They just don't have the ability, like developmentally, really. And I just think also when you're that young, that just feels like life. Like that's normal because you don't know anything different. So it's just like that's just what happens, you know?
Okay, Rebecca, we've all been there. If we're a widow, you die, not you die, you die inside because your person dies. But we have this, I mean, we have no energy, but then we do have energy to help other people understand what we're going through. And for some of us, that's a form of therapy. Some of us just do it in a journal. Some of us put it on the internet. What are some things that you did to process this?
Yeah. During our journey, I started blogging, which was like the best thing that I could have done. I started, it was like a little bit of like to share what we were going through because like you just don't know literally until you live it. And it felt so isolating for me to be experiencing this. And like people were living their life. And I was like, I just like, if you only knew like a little bit, you know? So I started doing it for that reason, but also because people would just constantly ask me how Mike was doing. And I didn't have like the capacity to answer like all these messages and like tell him like there was never, it was very rarely like, oh, he's doing well. So it was like, you know, so I started blogging and I would share that on social media just with like friends and whoever would read it. And I got a lot of feedback from that. I connected with a lot of people who were grieving in their own way, their own person. And just a lot of feedback on like my ability to write. I never, like, I didn't write in my past life. I didn't really think much of it. Like, I always loved writing. Like, I like loved like wordsmithing, like my resume or like things at work.
And you're rapping, remember?
And I'm an upcoming rapper. So, so anyway, I just like really fell in love with writing. I fell in love with this like idea of connecting with other people. It was like connecting with other people on Facebook groups and all of that and through blogs, and that literally saved my life. Like having people who understood or like spoke my language when you're talking about treatment or widowhood or like solo parenting, like that was a lifesaver for me. So I blogged, and that was really, besides spending some time with my kids, like it helped me through tremendously.
Did you have a lot of people reach out to you to ask that were going through the same things, or maybe at the beginning of a brain cancer journey? What kind of response did you get?
I did have people reach out. People got really invested in our story. And I wasn't expecting that, but you just like people just got on and they would like follow my blogs and just really were rooting for us and following along. There were people who did reach out who were like, my dad had brain cancer, or this person had brain cancer, or like, I'm just like, I was taking care of my husband and or my parent or something. So there were a lot of people in all different kind of phases, whether they were taking care of someone, already lost someone, who would reach out. And it just, I think they felt validated, and I felt like, well, maybe it is, like, maybe if I could make them feel validated, like, that's, that helps me, and it makes me feel validated in return. So it was like a like really sort of a beautiful thing to make those connections.
Did you blog? So I know you blogged during his illness. Did you continue to blog in once you entered the widow phase of your life, your widow era?
Yeah, I did keep blogging. I do, like, occasionally now, but after Mike died, I had this urge to write a book, and I've always kind of wanted to, but didn't have necessarily something that inspired me like this. And I remember saying to Mike, like, I really want to write a book. And he was like, you should do it. Like, he knew he wasn't going to be here for it, but he encouraged me to do it. And then that was always in the back of my head. So after he died, I was like, now's the time. Like, I'm just going to go for it. So I did still blog, but I also was kind of like, anything that would, like, inspire me or come to my head, I would try to put that in the book and focus on the book for that time. So that actually, my book will be out in May, May 7th. It'll launch on Amazon.
That's exciting. Is your book a memoir style, or is it a spy novel?
Or is it a rap?
It's actually a rap
novel, not rap audiobook,
which is a new genre that we've invented
today,
right here and now.
By, what is my name again?
Grandmaster Reb.
Reb.
It's a memoir. It's called I'd Still Choose You. And it's about our love story. Because, I mean, we had a pretty unique relationship. Again, we met in eighth grade. Like, I honestly don't know who I was before him. Like, we grew up together. So there's some of our relationship and how that developed. There's our life after marriage and then into his diagnosis. And my life as a caregiver, my life as a widow, what some things that I've learned along the way and steps that I took to heal, one of which was writing, connecting with people. So that's the gist of the book.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor. So I don't know if you said this already, but what year was it when Mike died? Did you say
he died in
2022?
September of 2022. Yep.
So it's now been like a year and a half, a little over that. Is that how long it's been?
Yeah, a little over a year and a half.
So how's it going? How are you enjoying this widow era?
I'm in like a much better place than I was, you know, at that time. So this book has kept me so busy. My kids keep me busy. I started an organization called the Small Moments Foundation, and we create moments of joy for children who lost a parent or sibling to cancer. So like when Mike passed, people would gift us like tickets to this or that or experiences. And they were sort of, they got us out of the house, and they were also, we would be out of the house doing something. And it was sort of this like realization or like epiphany. I don't know if that's the right word, but like I'd be like, we can still have fun. We can feel joy, and we can go home and it's still sad and it feels weird at home. But like it was like these small moments that like meant so much to me with my kids. And it kind of gave me confidence as a solo parent that like I could still give them a good life. And so that's what inspired this nonprofit. So we launched on the anniversary of his passing, and we have like six families so far. So it's like less than a year, and I had no idea what to expect, but we're doing it. And it's
That's so
very,
cool.
Very, rewarding. And I am recently engaged.
What?
I know.
She dropped that without any warning.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Okay, stop. Back up.
Stop
and
the
now
presses.
Go.
Crazy. Okay. I know it's wild.
Tell us, like, when did you even decide that this was a possibility? Did you date? Did you just find this person on the side of the 7-Eleven? I mean, like,
okay.
Where did... What?
So, after Mike passed, I was venting one day. I have never dated, ever. Like,
Seriously.
literally, I only dated Mike, and it wasn't even, I mean, I don't know what you call it, in, like, eighth grade.
You went to the prom. I mean, come on.
We were, like, scared to talk on the phone when we, like, it was, like, you know, we were so young. So I'd never done this. And I was like, I just had no interest. I didn't have the time. Like, but one day I was venting to a friend, my college roommate, and she was like, you should talk to my cousin. He was just going through like a crappy situation, has two young kids. And sort of also feeling the loneliness of this like single parent life, solo parent life. So she was like, just talk, like, you know, someone who can understand. So we did, but like, when you talk to someone who, I feel like when you've been through so much, like, conversation's a little bit different than like what you might talk on like an app or something. Like, you get into conversations, like these deep conversations, like there's no time for like the little stuff. So we started like talking and having like real conversations, and we just connected and became friends, and then eventually more than friends. Now we're engaged.
I am curious because you were widowed when you were 30. Were you 30 also when he died?
Yes. Was I 30? Yes.
That's so young. Like, you have so much of your life ahead of you. Had you and Mike talked about having more kids, or were you good with two?
One of the biggest challenges that I have, one of my biggest things that I grieve is what I thought my family was going to look like. Like, honestly, I sit in the OBGYN office sometimes. I go in and I hold back tears every time, because we would have had a third child. I so badly wanted that. I honestly, one of the hardest parts of this for me is the possibility of that not happening. My partner has two kids, so we're like, are we super crazy? Like, do we want to like a fifth? Like, are we really going to do that? Like, we kind of have our hands full. So I don't, you know, who knows what will happen.
Yeah.
But
well, the reason I was asking that is because, like, if you're going to add two more kids, like, just add water, two more kids are going to grow out of the ether, and you're going to have four kids suddenly.
Then
and
they
I
double
wondered
in
if
size.
I wondered if that's something that you like feel happy about, or if you were like, oh, I was just going to have two. But it sounds like you wanted to have a bigger family, so it's probably not
I
a bad
did.
thing.
And yeah, and the kids are the same age as
oh, that's
my
fun
kids.
and hard.
Chaos, like,
yeah.
Absolute chaos, but it's fun and they love each other. I mean, the kids get along well. We have so much fun. It is chaos, but yeah, it's like it's just different, and you grieve that, what you thought your life was going to look like, what you thought your family was going to look like, and what it does look like. And I love it, and I'm so grateful, and I am happy now. And I never thought I'd be where I am now, but it's different. And you still, at the same time, like, I long for what I thought was going to be, you know.
What's this new kid's name? The new kid on the block.
The new my partner.
Yeah.
not the new baby that they might create someday or might not.
I'm just calling you a kid because you're younger than me. So
Matthew.
Matthew. Okay.
Yes.
So how is it for Matthew? Does he feel like there's any sort of competition or strangeness in dating a widow?
He's getting used to it. But it's very complicated for him because he was divorced, so he didn't have that same experience. So like not so much competition, but there's definitely like, how do I say this? Maybe competition for like my thoughts and like what am I always thinking about? Am I just thinking that like I'm missing Mike? Am I thinking that like I'm being present? So I think there's like he like curiosity of like what's going through my head at any given moment. But he's very open to like we talk about Mike. Like he knows how important it is for Mike to be very present in our lives, for my kids. So he's like open to what I need. He's supportive. He definitely like holds space for all of that. It's just he doesn't know, so I have to like kind of educate him like on what I need and what it's like and what I'm feeling and how it's possible that I'm like feeling excited about this but also feeling sad about this. And like it's complicated. It's very complicated.
So you mentioned that you just moved to a new city, college town. Is that what you said?
Collegeville.
Collegeville. Is there a college there?
There is.
Okay,
This is
good.
funny. We were just out to dinner on Friday and we were like, why is it called Collegeville? And we were trying to look, and there was like a college like many, many years ago. I think there were like multiple colleges there at one point. This is not
Okay.
important. This is not exciting information. But anyway, there is a college there
Well, I did
currently.
ask, so I mean,
But
very
yes, there
important.
currently is a college there.
Did you move in the time frame where you have been dating and or engaged to Matthew?
Yeah, so I wanted to move towards my family, which is who I live 5 minutes from now. I wanted to move. I also knew I needed to move out of the house that I was in where Mike died. Mike encouraged me. Like I would be like, Mike, I'm living here forever. And he's like, you gotta leave this house after I
You
die.
gotta get out.
I'm like, you need to stop saying that because you're putting bad thoughts and I'm staying here forever. But then after he passed, I'm like, he's right. This doesn't make sense for me anymore. I thought we would be in that house for I thought he, you know, I thought he would live 10 years, let's say, and that my kids would be established in a school district, and then I would feel less inclined to move. But it happened so fast. And so I was like, it just doesn't make sense to be here. So I wanted to move in that area. Matthew lived in that area, just coincidentally. But yes, we have moved in together, if that's what you're wondering. We
That's not what I was wondering,
oh, we Yeah, I
but
know. It's
thank you.
okay. So I kind of like put off my urgency to move for a little while until we felt like it was right, and then moved in together.
So what I was curious about was how you dealt with your, like when you pack up your house, you have to take all of the things that belong to you and Mike, and now you're transporting them to you and Matthew. So how did you deal with that? Like, do you still have family pictures up? Do you still have like the little knickknacks that you got at your different vacations or what have you? How much of Mike is in your new house?
That's hard, and that's like conversations we had to have because again, I want Mike to be very present, especially for my kids, right? So I still have things out. I have more personal things maybe like at my desk, but we have pictures of Mike in the house. We have a Google Home like everywhere, like even at Matthew's desk, and it like pops up pictures of Mike and like the boys and like we have Mike is present all over our house, but mixed in with like our current life. So it sort of shows all of it. But there are other things like, you know, like a something with our wedding date on it that I don't necessarily know what to do with. I still have a lot of stuff in my basement that I'm like, I don't want this to stay in the basement, but what do I do with it? Family pictures. I have some pictures of us in the boys' room. I have Mike was a hunter and before he ever got sick, I was like, those deer heads, like they can go in our garage and nowhere else. Like,
Oh
I'm like, he's like, what
no.
about like in the family room? I'm like, no, they can go in the garage. Like where you work out, like they can go in the garage. But now I have
They can
one in each.
watch you work out spookily,
Right. But now I have one in each of the boys' rooms. He had two deer
spookily.
heads mounted. So now I put them in there because I feel like that's special. So he's our things and pictures are very much still like around our house. But I don't know what's right or wrong. I'm just kind of like going with it and what feels right or feels like I'm honoring him, but not necessarily making Matthew feel less.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a hard thing. I don't think there is a right or wrong. It's just, and takes a lot of communication. I would guess. I haven't had to do that. And I would not let the deer heads. Did you know, side note, that you're supposed to like brush those things or they get mites?
Ew. Are you sure you want
Like,
them above your kids' beds?
wait, like regularly?
I mean, we might need to Google this, but I think
I'll
yeah,
do
I
it.
think you're
Do you
supposed to
have
like
to
brush them.
shampoo them? Like, is there like dry
Oh,
shampoo?
well, hold on. It's just the skull.
Oh,
Oh,
okay.
there's no
Okay.
hair. I should have
I
put,
was.
yeah, I'm like, brush it. Like, what?
Well, I can still Google, do you have to brush deer skulls?
Oh my gosh. Well, I will have, I have not done that.
I don't think you have to brush just the skulls.
Well,
Just.
now I just learned how to clean a skull, so I am gonna exit that, Google. Back to you.
Oh my goodness. I love how it always, like, people are always like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, I have no idea. We're going to find ourselves talking about really weird things, like, how do you clean a deer skull? It's
Rap
fine.
and new rap names. You never know. I'm curious about your foundation. Will you tell us a little bit more about that and what does it do to help people and where can they find it?
So, our website is www.smallmomentsfoundation.org. And basically how it works is we've gotten referrals from schools, school counselors, other organizations. I work also with the Breathing Room Foundation, which is a local organization that supports families while they're going through a cancer diagnosis. So they supported us. I actually do grant writing for them now, but through them, I've connected with a lot of other organizations, and through these connections, we've gotten referrals. So through our website, a family can be nominated, and then I connect personally with the family and just try to get an idea of what their kids are into, what might bring them joy, what they like to do, so we can create a personalized, meaningful experience. So for example, I have a family going to Hawk Mountain, in a couple weeks, and they're doing this like tree planting experience and gonna hike. And this was something that the father who passed from cancer, he was very into being outdoors, hiking, planting trees, like cleaning up, and all of that. So we try to make it meaningful. And yeah.
Is
Yeah.
it a local thing only? So is it for the College City only? Do you like, I'm gonna try and find every single thing that's not Collegeville, College Town, Collegeburg.
College shanty town.
We've started, so we started in Montgomery County, which is where I live. And then we expanded to Bucks County. And so we're sort of in this like phase, and then Chester County. So like we're sort of in this phase where we're trying to figure out what we can handle with our, the funding that we have, because we're still so brand new. So we're like, if we open up, just open it up, it's a free for all, and we don't have the funding for that, but we want
Yeah.
to grow. So we're sort of just trial and error with that. So if we get a nomination outside of that county, it's something the board discusses. Can we manage this with our funding and that. But I mean, I hope that we grow. Like, that's my goal.
That's so cool. Can you also remind us what the name of your book is, when it's coming out, and where to find that?
Yes, my book is called I'd Still Choose You. It's a memoir. It will be out on Amazon on May 7th.
That's
All
really cool.
right.
Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us and telling us a little bit about your story. We are so happy that we have uncovered your hidden talents. I think we need a sample. So maybe if you want to find one of those cards you wrote, you need to send us
Oh
a
my gosh. I would
screenshot.
that would be so funny. I will try to find one. That's so
Okay.
funny. Maybe
Unless
we
it's highly inappropriate, and then don't. Just
And
kidding.
then
No,
no,
this.
that then we'll just put explicit and we'll still put it up.
Oh, that's true, because that's very on brand, right? The more explicit, the better. So,
Yeah.
okay, that's
Yeah,
fine.
I will find that.
Okay.
Guys, I can give you a beat right now.
Yeah, I can do nothing with that.
No.
Okay.
It's more like a I don't even know.
If the tempo's good, you can make a beat, a different beat. And hey, if anybody wants to write a widow rap to this beat, you're welcome to. Here it is.
It will not be me. That is all I can absolutely guarantee.
Rebecca, I have one final question for you. Very important. Cheese. Do you like it? If so, what's your favorite cheese?
Cheese? I like the Parmesan.
Like out of a can?
Grated or like dehydrated?
Like a block.
Flakes.
Ooh.
Like, you know, like
the shaved ones?
Yeah, the shaved, like, yeah.
Your last name sounds very Italian to me. Is it Italian?
Yeah. So my husband was Italian. That's my husband's last name. But my last name was Machete, which is also Italian. So yes. Okay.
So if you were to have told us that your favorite was the Parmesan cheese from a can, I was going to say you are going to be like removed from the Italian folks.
Yeah.
Roles.
From their your DNA.
Your heritage.
Ancestry.
Yes. This is going to be like, we shun you.
It's so funny. Also... So when I first met Matthew, I was making my kids spaghetti and I broke it in half to put it in the, and he's like, you can't do that. Like, aren't you Italian? Like, you're not, I don't think you're supposed to be breaking. I was like, you know what? I'm a solo parent. I
have don't care.
Two kids. Like, I'm going to just do what works right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And also for your kids,
and
spaghetti,
sauce, like
you're just dumping that can of Parmesan cheese on their spaghetti because they don't care.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
We're doing what we have to do.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, for sharing your story. Thanks for playing along with all of our silly shenanigans. We hope everybody listening has enjoyed hearing your story as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you guys want to keep the podcast going, you should check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/WWDN.
If you'd like to buy us tacos, go to buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And something we always appreciate is a really nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you guys also check out the Widow Wives Club if you want to be able to talk with other people who are widowed and dealing with really complex and hard questions and that you can't ask on your regular page because people are weirdos. Come join us there. It's a really great place.
We'd love to see you.
Yeah. And until we get to talk to you again, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
I'm Rebecca.
We are just two young widows and one grandmaster Reb. And we're all just trying to figure out widow.
We
do
now.
Hello, hello. Welcome, number one, as she does our Patreon shout out.
Hello, everyone. This is number one. All right. Thank you to Kyra Vinson, Julie Hadlock, Karina Jacobo, Kathy Massetta, Brittany Cruz, Kristen Powellek, Jen Turk, Kimberly Shelady, Anika Goodman, Jill Williams, Diana Duhamel, Susie Dunigan, Jessica Burke, Katie Saucier, Karen Lindsay, Becky Luters, Laura Sue, Leah Johnston, Alexis King Adulo, Berkeley, it's Jennifer Saunders, Linda, Alicia McAllister, Vivian Hart, Jan Caluso Seely, Jenny Dippold, Evelyn Flores, Doris Reichel, Eileen Stevens Dem, Lisa Hardman Powell, Jen O'Brien, Meg Murdo, Johnny Walker, Karen Ochoa, Audrey Henniger, Marianne McDonald, Amy Burke, Anne Drennan, Katie Goetz, Amy Wesenberg, Naomi Brown, Trenton Thompson, Neil Hooper, and Cicely Hatchett, Marianne Hammond, Rebecca Olmaker, Brandy Younger, Connie Remich, Jennifer Davis, Carol Scholes, Robin Flam, Lou Clausen, Kevin Ferry, Maya Glasser, Barbara Schneeberger, Patricia Weist, Jean Marie Massey, Eric Vandermeulen, Jenny Armstrong, Rachel Tang, Melissa Bowers, Deborah Westwood, Laura Keeley, Mary Catherine Anderson, Jennifer Beale, Gia Benoit, Gina Haz, Rebecca Zaiba, Lindsay Kanopka, Stacey Saywert, Judy Malkin, Chris Steffen, City Reynold, Jennifer Brown, Debbie Fells, Chris DeWaite, Kathy Murray, Dawn Barber, Deborah Nylick, Jocelyn Milo, Amy Hartman Martell, Sunshine Haven, Missy Schubert Molstein, Mary McGowan, Katie Radcliffe, Constance Bell, Dennis Brozo, Daniel Katterberg, Ivan Meisner, Marie Hoffman, Dawn Sutherwhite, Christina Scambato, Jackie Coyle, Wendy, Ashley Hahn, Jane Randall, The Winehouse, Anna Tracy, Gabe Lozano, Jenny Barrow, Christine Anderson, and David. That was a lot, but thank you all for supporting us.
That was special.
Incredible.
This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over, and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.